This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 33 of the ceasefire after 15 months of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Gaza and the occupied West Bank. In Gaza, the bodies of four Israeli captives have been handed over today by Hamas as part of the ongoing truce deal. The bodies were placed in black coffins and handed over to the Red Cross to be transported across the Gaza boundary. The four Israelis, including a mother and her two small children, were reportedly killed in Israeli airstrikes while they were being held in Gaza in the first months of the war. In a statement, Hamas said that Israel did not respect their lives while they were alive, but the group sought to, quote, respect the sanctity of the dead in the handover ceremony held in Khan Yunis. Living Israeli captives are due to be released on Saturday in the seventh prisoner exchange since the ceasefire began on January 19th. Nevertheless, as we've reported, Israel has committed more than 260 violations of the ceasefire terms. According to Palestinian security services, these violations include targeting Palestinians who are returning to their homes, targeting civilian vehicles and heavy equipment, carrying out incursions and bulldozing operations in the eastern areas, demolishing homes in the southern city of Rafah, flying drones across Gaza outside the hours under the terms of the agreement, and carrying out more than 130 aircraft sorties overhead. Euromed Human Rights Monitor this week documented Israeli quadcopter drones broadcasting recorded messages intending to threaten and frighten Palestinians in Gaza. Some of the messages warn of a, quote, second and third Nakba, referring to the initial expulsion of Palestinians from their lands in 1948. Ismail Al-Tawabta, the director general of the Gaza government media office, stated that Gaza is still waiting on the arrival of temporary homes and shelters for displaced families, which Israel is obligated to allow in under the ceasefire agreement. Heavy machinery, including bulldozers and earth movers required to clear the rubble and repair critical infrastructure, is also being held up by Israel at the crossings. Al-Tawabta told the Turkish Anadolu news agency that Israel has only allowed six small vehicles to remove rubble from the Gaza Strip, while preventing the entry of hundreds more that are desperately needed. He said that Gaza needs at least 500 heavy equipment vehicles, including bulldozers, excavators, and cranes. And the scale of the devastation of vital infrastructure is enormous. Gaza's Ministry of Public Works issued a wide-ranging report this week assessing the extent of Israel's catastrophic destruction of apartment buildings and homes across the enclave since October 2023. According to the ministry, approximately 170,000 housing units have been destroyed and 80,000 housing units remain unfit for habitation. The number of completely demolished or severely damaged housing units is expected to exceed 280,000. Meanwhile, the international agency Oxfam reports that Israel, quote, balks in approving the necessary supplies to repair or replace the nearly 1,700 kilometers of water and sanitation networks that have been destroyed by Israeli attacks. Oxfam stated this week that, quote, the picture remains extremely bleak and dangerously critical, especially in the North Gaza and Rafah governorates. Less than 7% of pre-genocide water levels is available to people, which the group says is heightening the spread of waterborne diseases. Quote, as fragile ceasefire negotiations hang in the balance, any renewed violence or disruption to fuel and the already inadequate aid would trigger a full-scale public health disaster. In North Gaza, almost all water wells have been destroyed by the Israeli military, Oxfam adds. Quote, over 700,000 people have returned to find entire neighborhoods wiped out. For the few whose homes remain standing, water is non-existent due to the destruction of rooftop storage tanks. In Rafah, Oxfam says. Over 90% of water wells and reservoirs have been partially or completely damaged, and water production is less than 5% of its capacity before the conflict. Only 2 out of 35 wells are currently operational. Despite efforts to resume water production since the ceasefire, the destruction of Gaza's water pipelines means that 60% of water is leaking into the ground rather than reaching people. At the same time, Israel has continued to attack and kill aid workers and security forces who are accompanying the aid that is being let into Gaza. On Sunday, Israel targeted police officers who were securing aid distribution east of Rafah. In a statement, Hamas said that the airstrike continued another grave violation of the ceasefire agreement. The statement added, quote, "This crime, along with this breach of the ceasefire, adds to the occupation's ongoing refusal to uphold the terms of the agreement." The latest example of this was the occupation statement today declaring that it will not allow the entry of mobile homes and heavy machinery, despite previously committing to doing so and informing mediators of this agreement at the end of last week. Israeli media released a video on Wednesday of armed and masked Israeli guards leading the director of Kamel Adwan Hospital, Dr. Hassam Abu Safiya, a pediatrician, in handcuffs and leg shackles, ostensibly at Ofer Prison, where he has been held since early January. Abu Safiya was abducted by Israeli soldiers from his hospital, along with his colleagues and patients, on December 27th. Israeli Channel 13 broadcast an interview with Abu Safiya at the prison and, according to his family, quote, deliberately rephrased and distorted his statements. Abu Safiya's family added, quote, the footage broadcast by Israeli media of our father, Dr. Hassam Abu Safiya, the director of Kamel Adwan Hospital, is yet another form of psychological terrorism, adding to the torture he has endured over the past 2 months. It also reflects clear media distortion through the manipulation and alteration of his statements. When asked about the Israeli prisoners, he responded that he is a pediatrician. However, his answer was deliberately rephrased and distorted, despite him completely denying all accusations made against him. We, the family of Dr. Hassam Abu Safiya, reject any media outlet publishing the video without addressing the psychological terrorism involved and exposing the manipulation of his statements. The sight of our father shackled and unable to move should prompt immediate and continuous action to ensure his immediate release. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of Gaza's Widows' Struggle to Care for Their Children Amid Devastation by Rasha Abu Jalal, writing from Gaza. The ongoing Israeli war on the Gaza Strip is a war on women, Ismail Al-Tawabta of the government media office in Gaza told the Electronic Intifada. He said women and children bore the brunt of the aggression, making up some 70% of the total casualties. According to the UN, at least 17,000 children lost their fathers or both parents during Israel's 15-month genocidal aggression. In response, volunteers established Al-Baraka camp for displaced widows and their children last April in the Al-Mawasi area of Khan Yunis to provide widows and orphans with a safe environment. The camp's director, Mahmoud Kalak, said the camp came into existence because of appeals from widows to provide them with their own shelter due to a lack of available tents and severe overcrowding in other shelters. The camp currently houses about 70 widows and their children. According to Kalak, the camp provides daily meals, drinking water, and limited electricity to charge phones and lighting. Abla Mansour, 36, whose husband was killed in an Israeli attack last April, lives in the camp with her 3 children, 4, 10, and 12. Quote, "Sometimes I have to sleep hungry to leave food for my children," she said in early January. She said her children try to help their mother in any way they can by collecting wood to light fires, standing in long lines to get drinking water for the family, or doing various other errands. As night fell, Mansour used the dim light of a candle to sew old clothes that she will try to sell at a nearby market. She said the money she would make would barely provide for her children's basic needs. However, she refuses to give up. "Hope is the only thing we have left," she said. That's an excerpt from Rasha Abu Jalal's feature, Gaza's Widows Struggle to Care for Their Children Amid Devastation, on electronicintifada.net. Turning to the occupied West Bank, my colleague Tamara Nassar reports that alongside Israel's systematic campaigns of forced displacement of Palestinians under a widespread massive assault dubbed Operation Iron Wall, its colonial settlement expansion is accelerating. Tamara writes that in Jenin refugee camp, for example, testimonies gathered by the United Nations Human Rights Office include accounts from residents who were told by Israeli forces that they would not be allowed to return to the refugee camp. Some residents reported being told by Israeli forces to forget the refugee camp. The agency even reported receiving photos from Jenin refugee camp showing, quote, freshly bulldozed roads with new signs apparently giving several streets Hebrew names. This must be understood in a broader context alongside statements and actions by Israeli officials signaling a push toward annexing the occupied West Bank. Israel's civil administration, the bureaucratic arm of Israel's military occupation, published a new proposal to build nearly 1,000 new housing units in the Efrat settlement, which looms over the Palestinian city of Bethlehem. If this is done, it would increase the Jewish-only population of the colony by 40%, according to Peace Now, a settlement watchdog group based in Israel. Tamara adds that during the course of Israel's Operation Iron Wall, which is approaching its one-month mark, Israel has killed at least 44 Palestinians, including children, and injured many others, according to the UN Human Rights Office. Other human rights groups have estimated the number killed to be higher. The military assault, a coordinated effort involving Israel's military, domestic spy agency Shin Bet, and Israel's border police, includes the deployment of Israeli snipers in residential neighborhoods, home raids, the arrest of youth, aerial bombardments, and the destruction of buildings and critical infrastructure, such as water, electricity, and sewage systems. On February 12th, Israeli forces killed a Palestinian child in the Nur Shams refugee camp and then confiscated his body. Mohammed Hassan Abed, 16, was in the school's area on the western side of the camp. Defense for Children International Palestine could not conduct a full field investigation as Mohammed's body was confiscated, leaving the method of his killing unknown, as is the nature of his injury. A 15-year-old Palestinian boy died on February 17th from wounds he sustained 3 weeks before when he was hit by a shrapnel from an Israeli drone strike targeting a nearby vehicle. Dia al-Din Ahmad Sabane was standing in front of his father's shop in the Kabatiya neighborhood, south of Jenin, when the drone struck a car carrying two men. Shrapnel hit Dia al-Din in the head. He remained in a coma, and doctors were unable to operate due to the severity of his injuries until he succumbed to them. Sabane's death brings to 14 the number of Palestinian children killed by Israel in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of the year, more than half of whom were killed by drone strikes, while most others were killed by live ammunition. For more, read Tamara Nassar's report, Palestinians Forced to Flee U.S.-Armed Israeli Military in West Bank, on electronicintifada.net. Meanwhile, Israel has attacked several schools for Palestinian children in refugee camps across the occupied West Bank as part of its plan to close the operations of the UN Agency for Palestine Refugees, UNRWA. In occupied Jerusalem, Israeli police raided the Jerusalem Elementary School in Silwan, right outside the gates of the Old City, on Tuesday. According to witnesses, Israeli forces interrogated school administrators, including the principal, during the attack. A boys' school in the Wadi al-Joz neighborhood was targeted as well, as Israeli forces expelled students from their desks and forced the staff to close the school. Israeli troops also raided and stormed a vocational training school in Kalandia refugee camp, firing tear gas and sound bombs with 350 students and 30 staff present. Stéphane Dujarric, the spokesperson for the UN Secretary General, said that, quote, the use of tear gas and sound bombs in educational environments while students are learning is both unnecessary and unacceptable, adding the attacks are, quote, a clear violation of Israel's obligation under international law. Finally, as we always do, we wanted to share images of people expressing determination and resilience in the aftermath of Israel's 15-month campaign of destruction. Last weekend, 22-year-old Adel Tassir Sobeh was released from Israeli detention as part of the prisoner exchange. He was abducted by Israeli forces from Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City in March 2024. According to Al Jazeera, at some point during his 11-month detention, he was chained to a hospital bed for 50 days. He recounts his abuse and torture at the hands of Israeli forces and says that because of severe torture, his leg was amputated against his will. Adel says that he can't believe he was back in Gaza. He says that the Israelis told him over and over again that Gaza was, quote, over, and that he can't believe that there are people still alive here. Quote, even yesterday they were still saying that Gaza is finished, he said. Quote, long live Palestine. We broke the ego of all of Israel. We thank its people, its women, its men, its children. And journalist and researcher Maha Husseini filmed this scene from the Gaza shoreline with the caption, "Good morning from Gaza." And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.